Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad, newly engaged Riley.
Yeah, I am.
Yepers, the man is now hitched, ladies. He is off the market.
Well, I'm not hitched. I mean, I...
Well, you're going
I'm,
to be.
I'm on the pathway to being hitched.
That's right.
Yeah.
That'd be a very big weekend.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he's engaged and he's married. I didn't go to Vegas. What happened?
And Spencer Red Shirt Williams.
Hey, how are you doing, Eddie?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm good.
Nice. Look at that. You see that?
That was such a friendly interaction. I never see that.
All that
on
from
or
a red
off
shirt.
The mic.
Whoa, red shirt reference. Cute.
Thank you. We got an interesting show for you today, as we're going to be talking about a film that kind of took us all by surprise. So stick around as we discuss A Simple Favor. But before we do, Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of that info?
Sure will. Since we aren't a self-sustaining mommy blog full of visually interesting arts and crafts segments, the Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. What we lack in recipes and friendship bracelets, though, we make up for in compelling conversation, more than 130 of them to date, about the movie industry and the entertainment products that that industry produces. Subscribe to the Filmlosophers on your streaming platform of choice and listen to new episodes each Wednesday morning. You can't miss us. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Spencer, where else can they find us?
If you're desperate for a murder mystery to stand in for Serial or another crime podcast, we're probably not the best resource for you.
Nope.
On the upside, our range of topics is as broad as the list of films that are playing now in the theater and also on platforms like Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon. And the conversation doesn't stop here. With each new episode, it keeps on going on social media. Connect with us anytime by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Don't waste a minute of your life trying to figure out if this movie is worth seeing. We've already done the work for you. Just take a look at our episode archive at filmlosophers.com and let us be your guides.
That's right. Wow, look at you, Spencer.
Man, polished and professional.
I try.
Well, as we said, we have an interesting review for you today, as we're going to be talking about the recently released film currently in theaters, A Simple Favor. This film kind of flew under the radar for a lot of us. We weren't really sure what to expect because it didn't get promoted quite a bit in either in theaters or on any digital platform.
No, it kind of just appeared.
Yeah, we just happened to be scrolling through Fandango and looking at trailers on YouTube, and it just happened to come across one of our YouTube recommended playlists, and we saw it, and we were like, okay, I mean, who doesn't like a interesting murder mystery / supernatural weird looking thing? It looked okay.
That kind of toes the line with comedy versus intrigue. I mean, at least in the trailer. And you're I'm not gonna say any more yet.
So we got a chance to see this film.
I plead the fifth.
And needless to say, we have a lot of things to talk about. So before we do, Chad, why don't you give him that official synopsis?
Oh, I'd love to. Controversy centers around Stephanie, played by Anna Kendrick, a mommy vlogger who seeks to uncover the truth behind her best friend Emily's sudden disappearance from their small town. Emily, played by Blake Lively. Stephanie is joined by Emily's husband, Sean, who is played by Henry Golding from Crazy Rich Asians. We recently reviewed that movie. In this thriller, filled with twists and betrayals, secrets and revelations, love and loyalty, murder and revenge.
Directed by Paul Feig, the film stars Anna Kendrick, Blake Lively, Henry Golding, Andrew Reynolds,
yeah.
Linda Cardellini, Rupert Friend, and Gene Smart. The film, based on the novel of the same name by author Darcy Bell, is Paul Feig's second non-full-fledged comedy film since 2003's I Am David. So this is an interesting film because coming into it, I don't think there was any inkling that it was supposed to be comedic. I didn't get any idea that it was supposed to be humoristic at all. I thought it was supposed to be a serious film. Needless to say, this film tried to like really skate that thin line of being super serious and like a dark comedy, and it just didn't work.
Here's what I think.
Hey.
I'm just jumping straight to the end. In my mind, this movie was basically if you had the character of Jessica from New Girl, who is the main character, right? Zooey Deschanel's character from New Girl.
Yes.
If you asked the character, not Zooey Deschanel, the character of Jessica to write a murder mystery with a mommy vlogger who arts and crafts, you know, her way around everything, this is what you would get. Because there are like attempts at being serious, but it just can't. Like, it just can't stay serious. Something about the way that it has been put together, it's sort of like the idea inside of the idea might be good, but it wasn't.
It's like there was once at one point in time a grand idea to make a good movie.
Maybe.
And then this.
Debatable.
Happened. And then this happened.
It's possible. It exists within the realm of possibility.
Here's how bad this movie just performed for me, just personally. I'm pretty good at wanting to dive into as much about most of the films that we see, no matter how ridiculous it looks. I read at least the first and second book for The Meg right before we went to go see that.
Right, you did.
I was reading.
And you often read the books.
I do.
Listen to them.
Exactly. Or at least listen to them. You know, during the course of the day, I was reading Crazy Rich Asians, and I actually finished it right when we were about to start doing the episode for it. So I try to do as much of the research as I can. I had started this book, and in the process of watching the film and hoping to return to the book so that I could see, after we saw the film, I literally went to my library on my Audible account and hit delete. I'm like, I'm good. I know this was
a
free...
Did you pay for this audiobook? Can you get a refund?
It was... Oh, yeah, I got a refund. Okay. But I'm just like, Nope. I'm good. I'd rather not know how the book ends because the movie just did not do anything for me. Because this film, it's not so much as one of those types of films where it's like, well, maybe the book's better. Maybe the book may have something that the book doesn't. Everything that I checked out doesn't say a thing in terms of like whether or not the book is better or the book does something different. The only differences between the book and this movie are small, minor things. Like in the movie, Anna Kendrick's character is a vlogger, whereas in the book, she's a blogger. So she just writes. And in the book, the husband is a Wall Street stockbroker, whereas in this one, he was once an author who's now an English professor at a college or university. And it's just like minor things that aren't really big, but the ending is still the same. The way it goes is still the same, like how they're caught, blah, blah, blah. It's all still essentially the same thing. And I was hoping, like, because it's been a while since we've seen a great murder mystery type of film.
They're hard to pull off.
They really are. Like, if you look, you know, murder mysteries were the things of, like, the 50s and 60s. You had those film noir type films, you know, with Humphrey Bogart and Cary Grant and all these greats of the you know, the black and white ages where they were on the hunt. They were these PIs who were looking for this particular person or this particular thing or this particular item, and no dame or mobster or gang member was going to stop them, and they were going to go through all the muck to get to what they were going to do. And it was great because there was always these twists and turns. Like, I think of The Big Sleep. The Big Sleep is one of my favorite 1950s film noir movies because it's just Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall who are trying to figure out how to figure out where the rich man's daughter is, because she's this woman who's always getting drunk and wasted and whatnot. So it's difficult to say that, you know what, that tradition has passed on through all these years, because that was kind of a mainstay then. And it, like you were saying, it's difficult to find that now. It's difficult to see it pulled off.
Well, and it's sort of like this, when all is said and done in this film. Okay, so we've telegraphed our thoughts just by the title of the episode alone. And if you've read the description, you know that we're ultimately not going to be huge fans of this experience. So, you know, dear listener, you might be wondering, well, then why are you recording it at all? Why are we listening? And we always try to salvage,
yes,
some form of, I don't know, intelligent, appropriate discourse over films. I mean, we've covered Sharknado 6 for crying out loud. Oy. So I wouldn't say that it's intelligent, but, you know, we had a good time.
Yeah.
And in looking at this, one of the things that's really frustrating about this movie is that even with the murder mystery component, this movie is not a murder mystery, because it really is trying to be more of a thriller. It's really trying to do more of a Hitchcock thing, but it completely fails in all the areas that were so well honed, mm-hmm, in Hitchcock films.
Yes.
To make something really like goosebump and hair follicle raising, creepy and uncomfortable. Like, this movie takes those elements that would be like a Hitchcock type person would take this story and find those tension building creepy elements and play them up appropriately via, yeah, your camera angles, via the use of color and sound effects and the musical score. This movie basically just has punctuation mark moments where it's belligerently making you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And it's substituting the thrill factor with something considerably less developed. And it's really frustrating, because you do then get these quirky, like, am I supposed to laugh?
Yeah.
Like, there were moments, plural moments, multiple moments, where people in the theater with us were like, not only chuckling, they were like, I mean, it was like a rolling belly laugh, guffaw kind of like,
yeah,
laughter. And of course, those of us assuming that there's something deeper and more important going on for way too long, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, we're waiting for the next turn in the story to show you that none of this is funny. And I think that Paul Feig and whomever else is on the creative brain trust team behind this film, I shame on you. I wag my finger at you, because you dance around things that are so much, that are done so much better in movies that have been around for decades that you could pull from and learn from. And it's just, it's a mess.
Yeah.
Because primarily, I think at the heart of it, this movie doesn't know what it's trying to be.
No, I agree 100%. And that's part of the issue with this particular movie, because of the fact that you have individuals like Anna Kendrick and you have Blake Lively, who I believe the last movie she had done was the Danish Girl. I believe she was in The Danish Girl. I could be wrong. I know she did that shark movie,
The Shallows.
Which we also reviewed.
If I had our episode archive, I'd go ahead and reference the number, but alas, I didn't prepare.
This movie just really, it presents itself in the trailers, in the teasers, in every promotional material that you find. It presents itself as this like almost Gone Girl-esque type of film. You're coming in assuming you're going to see almost like a spitting image of what Gone Girl was about, which Gone Girl was, despite its unique graphic and gratuitous way it tells the story, is in all, you know, sense and purposes, a decent story. It tells it from beginning to end. It's just all over the place. This film tries to create a sense of tension and anticipation and just takes too long getting from point A to point B. And then when stuff does happen, it still draws out. It's like this movie may seem to be only 2 hours long, but it felt like it was like 6 hours while we were watching it.
I fully agree. Spencer, did you get that feeling?
Yeah, especially near the end of the movie where it's like, okay, well, we're about done here. But the movie's like, nope, we still have another 20 minutes of story. And you're like, how could there possibly be 20 minutes left in this movie? It doesn't make any sense.
Insert Anakin / Darth Vader no from episode 3.
But this is the sad thing, because of the fact that you look at movies and these types of films, these murder mystery types, I mean, they are, I guess, Hallmark types of films. They're Hallmark. It's a Hallmark genre, if you will, that's lasted the test of time over decades in terms of creating unique and tension-filled movies that have you guessing who done it all the way to the very end. It's one of those opportunities where in a moment where you could mix it in with a little horror and create something like Identity, or you do something that's ridiculous and fun like Weekend at Bernie's, or even something as unique as 1980s Clue, which is one of Spencer's favorite.
It's very good.
You have these great films that are hallmarked by this genre that has been around for decades, and so we haven't had one of those in a while. In all honesty, we haven't seen anything like that, and they're very few and far between. It's kind of like the sci-fi genre conversation that we had a few weeks back when we were talking about Kin. And so this could have been an opportunity where this could have stood out and shined brightly as a murder mystery. Sadly, the directors and the writers wanted to add so much comedy in it that it just kind of created just this confusion that made me feel almost like awkward to chuckle at. And not so much as laugh, but just chuckle like, yeah, okay.
There are entire, not even scenes, there are entire sequences, story beats, and characters that should have been deleted from the script before they ever produced it.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, you're sitting in the audience thinking, why are you here? Why are these characters doing it? This is not, like, you're wasting our time. You're just spending hours. It feels like hours. You're just spending minutes for no reason.
Yeah. Spence, in terms of murder mystery type films, are you familiar with... I know you're a huge fan of the movie Clue.
Yeah.
What are some of the fun things, what are some of the unique things about the movie Clue that you really love? Like, what is it about that particular murder mystery that continues to draw you in?
Well, I think with Clue specifically, it's more about... the characters and how they interact with each other, because everyone has a past and it's all kind of playing into what's happening now in this house. Especially like there's certain parts where, like, you know, especially when at the end of the movie where Tim Curry is going through his whole rundown of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's just really fun to watch, like, him, like, figure out, oh, it was you and you did this and you killed this person and you killed Yvette. And he's like, ooh, how did you figure it out? And that was really fun. This movie was missing all of that. Like the characters, most of them didn't work really well together. It's kind of like somebody said, okay, we kind of want to do this movie and we kind of want to do this other movie. Let's just save some money and make this one movie that does, like, both of these two things that don't really relate. And it's a weird final product that just has me, like, asking so many questions, like, throughout the movie of, like, well, why are you, if you're, this is your goal, why are you not doing this other thing? Or why are you doing this thing that's actively getting in your way? Like, I don't get it.
Spencer literally has been developing a list of questions the whole time we were prepping for this episode just to make sure that the questions are recorded somewhere. Whether or not we ever get anybody from the studio or any of the performers or director Paul Feig on the phone, these questions are important.
Oh, and we're going to talk about a few of them later.
Too bad that the movie leaves you with all those questions.
Yeah.
Because it didn't have to.
It really didn't.
So, jumping in, because obviously we've already stated our expectations, we didn't really have much to go on with the trailers that were not shown and what we hadn't seen. But I don't know. Did you guys have any expectations coming into the film? I honestly wasn't sure of anything. I didn't know what to expect. All I knew, Anna Kendrick was in it. Blake Lively was in it, and she wasn't because she's gone for half the movie. And that's about all I knew. That was literally the only expectation I had. Did you guys have any expectations?
That's a good question. No, I can't say that I did.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I'm in marketing, my day job. I get paid to do marketing. And so one of the things that I had on my mind that was a curiosity was just, you had mentioned earlier, Eddie, there was basically no promotion for this film. As far as I saw, we cut the cable a long time ago, so I don't watch, you know, garbage channels with reality programming and whatever. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's on those. But I saw one, like the very tail end of one commercial while I was at the gym the week that the movie came out. And it was the tail end of a trailer, and I remember seeing the two main actresses and the title of the movie, A Simple Favor, and I was like, I didn't know there was a movie coming out with those two in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was there on a Thursday and it was releasing Friday. And I thought, well, that's interesting that, I mean, because they're not like the most famous people on earth, but they are notable faces. I mean, you know who they are.
Yeah.
If you are a, you know, pop culture aficionado like we are. So I thought, well, it's interesting that they didn't really do any promoting of this film. I wonder if they had no marketing budget. So I was curious going in what it would feel like since they didn't market it very well. As a marketer, I was wondering. And then walking out, I realized, oh, that's why.
That's why. It's like, oh, that's...
Because you don't throw good money after bad. It's just bad form.
Yeah.
Like, you already wasted I don't know how many millions of dollars making the thing. So, I mean, it's a... apologies to anyone, I guess, who liked it, but this was a giant stinking turd. Why would I market it? Like, why would I promote it? It was really disappointing.
It really was. And it's interesting to kind of see it from that particular light, because of the fact that, in all honesty, I thought the lack of promotion was a part of the marketing. Like, to say, oh, this murder mystery, you don't know what's going to happen, and it's going to wow you when you see it. You know, kind of like the less is more kind of mindset. So that really does say a lot from the studio perspective, because then it seems like now that after the fact, after we've seen it, it's almost like, I think the studio knew this was going to be a flying turd and was just like, you know what, guys? We already made it. Let's try to get some kind of money out of it. Hey, Joe, do we have a trailer? Yeah, we cut that one that you know, just give it to them. Give it to the world. We'll just put it on the internet. I don't know. What about you, Spence? Any expectations at all or any thoughts prior to going to see the film?
So just so you know, I looked up the budget for this movie. It was roughly $20 million.
And really?
So far, it's...
It went all on Blake Lively's wardrobe, by the way. So,
yeah, for real. No, seriously, it probably did. So far, it's made $33 million in the U.S., so...
So it's turning a profit.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. But I think a lot of that can be attributed to, like, to the names that are in it. Like, Henry Golding right now is no pun intended, gold, in terms of his recent role in Crazy Rich Asians and just what he has in store for the future for him as an actor. Anna Kendrick is Hollywood's darling right now. And then Blake Lively is one of those individuals that has been coming more and more into her own and taking the lead role in most of her films. And this was going to be one of those opportunities for her to really kind of step out of what was the norm for her and be something unique. Now, whether or not if any of that paid off, we'll get into that. But I think a lot of people are going into, because it's true to say, just real quick, and we'll jump into the review. It's true to say that you can make however much money in the opening weekend. It's the second weekend that really determines how successful a film is, because people will go and see a film once, but they'll see a good movie twice.
Or they'll tell their friends that it was good and the friends will go and see it.
Exactly.
Later.
So,
yeah.
Oh, anyway, my expectations about this film.
Thank you for joining us, Spencer. We're glad you could be on the podcast today.
Hey, you look like you're going to skip me, so I went back. I just wanted to give some information about budgets. yeah, so actually I saw a few trailers for this before movies I went to see, like, last month or so. And it looks, you know, mildly interesting, you know. You've got Blake Lively. She disappears. She has a child. She probably would have taken her child if she was, like, meaning to leave. So what happened? And I was like, well, that seems like a good starting premise, which, you know, I feel like that's a good starting premise.
Yeah.
There just needed to be more of a lot.
There needed to be more of so much in this movie.
There needed to be more of some things and less of a lot of things.
Really? So jumping right into the film, as we said, Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick are kind of the two main stars that you end up paying the most attention to in this film. Anna Kendrick seriously plays this stereotypical stay-at-home mom who has a vlog, who is the overachiever at her child's school, signs up for just about every activity. All the other parents don't like her because of everything that she does to make them look bad, not purposefully, but it just happens coincidentally that it shows that they're bad parents. So you have this particular character, and then you have the juxtaposition to that, which is Blake Lively's character, who is this mom who works in the city and works for this large fashion designer and doesn't really participate, isn't really a part of her kid's activities, and shows up one day to see her kid, and they end up going on a play date. That's ultimately how it happens.
Yeah, that's the start of the movie.
Yeah, basically. I mean, so the movie is set in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
So Blake Lively's character works in Manhattan and dressed to the nines, always super fancy looking.
Yes.
Crass as all get out. Very blunt, straightforward, and quite frankly, just not likable.
Yeah.
And doesn't care. You know, doesn't mind what people think of her.
No, not at all.
She's kind of, I wouldn't say above it, she's distanced from it. She it doesn't like place any value in it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then over the course of time, these two moms sort of develop a friendship ?
I don't even know what to call that.
Both of them at some point in the story eventually are referencing one another as their best friend.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense because they don't go well together. Mm-mm. As like personas, but
not to mention Blake Lively's character does not treat Anna Kendrick's character good at all.
No. And it's all very awkward for those of us sitting in the audience, as often as possible. Awkward.
It is.
The simple favor, by the way, that's referenced in the title of the film is, could you go pick up my son and watch him until I get home this evening? And then Blake Lively's character never returns home for days.
Yep.
The husband is overseas, so presumably has an alibi. And Stephanie, which is the mommy vlogger, played by Anna Kendrick, is communicating to her blog, her video blog watchers. She starts reaching out to them for help. And so this online community, to a certain degree, gets involved in also trying to help sort of figure out what happened. And that's about as structured of an outline as I think we could provide, because there's so much extra random. Like, number one, Eddie, you were right. Spot on earlier, these scenes in the beginning drag on forever. Like, to establish something as simple as Stephanie has her own vlog and the other moms don't like her because she's too perfect and volunteers for stuff, that takes 20 minutes in the beginning of the movie. It's a total waste. Like, that's a 2-minute explanation. You've now, like, I don't even know. It's not even like quintupled times two. I don't know how to times 10 in like a Roman numeral-esque speech. I don't even know. It's such an overage.
Yeah.
Waste. You get these other mom characters that are completely unnecessary. The only reason they exist is to later explain why the boys might stay with another family for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason they're there.
Yeah.
You don't need multiple scenes with them or exchanges and dialogue and what, like, you don't need it.
No.
So anyway, that's the simple favor is, would you watch my kid? I'm at work putting out a fire, mm-hmm. and I'll be there in a few hours, and then she never shows up.
For days. One of the things that's kind of noticed in this particular film, so in terms of Anna Kendrick's character and Blake Lively's character, is it just me, or is there like seriously an overemphasized stereotype in terms of these particular characters? Like with Anna Kendrick's character, you see somebody who is the typical, like I was saying earlier, overachiever mom, the mommy vlogger, the woman who knows how to make gluten-free bread or whatever. I don't know what moms make nowadays. It's changed over the years. Like, she knows how to make, she apparently knows, like, the cure-all for rashes on arms, and she does all this through her vlog. She over signs up for everything. She's very bubbly, like annoyingly bubbly. It's interesting because I was watching her in those first 5 to 10 minutes, and I almost turned to Chad and said, "Chad, we both know somebody who is just like that, and you used to work with her, and I work with her now," and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this is her. This is in a good way, mind you, but just."
I was gonna say, don't drag me into this mud smearing campaign. I like that person.
She's great. No, she's great. It's just similar person.
Because it sounds like you have a problem.
I just said she had a bubbly personality.
Mm.
Don't twist my words. Don't you dare.
Okay.
No, and so it's interesting how this particular character just continues to just be so positive and optimistic, and even in it was really interesting. And then having the total opposite with Blake Lively's character, you have those parents who work, you have those parents who just don't have enough time to spend with their kids because of their day jobs or whatnot, and she is like that to the nth degree. Like, obviously there are certain parents who, when they go home after a busy day or hard day, they go and have a drink or do whatever, and this woman is like chugging gin like straight from like the bottle, practically.
Repeat. Yeah.
And it's just like, I get it. You're trying to establish the situations of these particular characters, but I felt like they could have toned it down a bit in terms of like how much they were really pushing the personas of these characters. You could have been more subtle with it. You could have been a little bit more, I don't know, just smooth in terms of creating these personas, but I don't know. What do you think,
Spence?
Well,
I think the movie overall has a problem with subtlety and not using it, especially when they really should, because you find out some things about people's past that you, as a person, would feel a lot better not knowing about.
That's true.
Amen. I think the real issue is I have a suspicion that the source material, the book itself, has a lot of that in it.
Mm.
And I dearly, dearly hope that the author of the book is getting counseling because it's just disturbing. It's unnecessary. Again, like the other mom characters, you don't need to know anything about them to know that, oh, one of them could watch the kids while Anna Kendrick's character plays detective and drives to Michigan and tries to put some clues together. You don't need to know anything about who that other babysitter character might be. And yet they're in multiple scenes and they all travel together, and it's odd and unnecessary. Here also, these dark and sordid past kind of things are like blatantly unimportant to the plot.
And it's crazy how much time that's spent on it, too.
And it's so much time.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, you spend so much time, and you're sitting there, and I know that not everybody watches movies the way that we watch movies.
Right,
because
right.
We have this podcast, and our goal is to, again, put together some intelligent discourse over what we've seen, even if what we've seen is Sharknado or The Meg or whatever, right? We're there thinking very analytically about an entertainment product, granted. However, for those who are sitting there not being entertained, you're going to start getting analytical, and you're going to know, like, okay, the thing that you're showing me is unimportant to the murder mystery.
Yeah.
Like, the whole sordid background of Stephanie's past is actually unimportant.
Yeah.
And you know, even when they bring up like suspicion that she might be involved in one or more, you know, negative, like antagonistic aims against other characters, that has nothing to do with her past.
No, not
the past
at all.
Is just ugly and weird and uncomfortable. Like, okay, mention it and move on, because you're wasting our, every time you bring it up, you're wasting our time.
It's interesting. Like, I don't. This is almost along the lines of kind of like divergent writing. Like, I don't feel like
100%.
Like, I feel like there wasn't much research put into this particular film. This person, the author, and I say this person because you never know these days. Darcy could be guy, girl, whatever.
True.
This particular author, I feel like, perused through like the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s different types of movies, and like, you know what? I'm going to pull from the Maltese Falcon here, and I'm going to pull from, you know, the Towering Inferno here, and I'm going to pull a little bit from Clue here, and let's throw in some, you know, some interesting parts here. It's like she pulled these interesting parts from other films and then kind of put it into this story and was like, all right, I can make this work. And I feel like this should be almost like a TV movie. Like, this should have went to TV.
I feel like this is still not for TV.
I would have rather.
I feel like it's for the garbage can.
I'll tell you what, I would have rather not have paid for it, yeah. In all honesty.
That's true. Yes. I do want a refund.
Man.
But this film just really pushes like the your ability to try to respect the film. Because I'll be honest with you guys, I wanted the film to work. As most of you know who listens to us religiously, or at least consistently, you know, we try to give as much grace to a particular movie that comes out that may not be as popular with critics. It may not actually succeed well with critics. We try to find those, like Chad was saying earlier, those silver linings. We try to find the actual positives in film because of the fact that we have that appreciation for it. There's a line in the sand when it comes to that, because of the fact that we, even though we respect cinema and we want to find those positive parts, if you're a filmmaker who is just looking to insult your audience constantly by insulting their intelligence, by making you think, oh, by the way, we're going to go this route. By the way, we're going to throw a joke in here. By the way, we're going to try to do this. By the way, we're going to do that. And it's like, no, I don't know. Wait, what? Just stop. No, I don't want to hear the story about you and your brother. No, stop. I don't want to hear about the story about that painting. Please, just no more.
Right.
Okay, the whole brother thing. Like, as that was happening, I was like, I kind of really want to leave now. Because it was so bad. And they spent so long on it. And come back to it. Why would you come back? This is, if you're going to do this, it's a one-shot thing.
Absolutely.
And one, you're done.
And
don't come
it
back.
Played no... It had no impact on the overall story
at all.
It didn't even...
It was the punchline of a joke.
It didn't...
It was a really lengthy, oft-referred-to punchline of a joke that was already told an hour ago. That's what it was.
It didn't need... I mean, it didn't establish any type of connection between the two characters, the two females. It didn't do anything for me in order for me to wonder why she was upset when her husband had the car crash, because it wasn't just him. It was him and her brother. Like, I didn't need all that to have that established in terms of, like, okay, she cared for both people in there. It could have been just a normal mindset. It didn't need to go to that nth degree. It just didn't do anything for... In fact, I think the film began to nosedive for me severely at that point.
Absolutely.
Because if that is a plot point that you were trying to drive to your audience members... Going back to what Chad said, I think you need to see help, because that's just not... I mean, I don't care. I mean, I don't really want to know about anybody's thoughts about that kind of thing. That's just not my jam.
I mean, definitely, I think that in that part of the story, because you kind of get, like, Blake Lively's character, you kind of get from the very start, like, she even references her therapist, but you understand that she's a bit unhinged. Like, she's not... She looks very elegant and classy, but she definitely doesn't have it all together. She's got this weird shifting mask of domineering versus pseudo submissive with her friend, but then predatory toward her husband, but then also enjoys to be chased. And like, she's all over the map, and you know that basically the entire time that you see her on screen in the first third of the movie. You know that she's abnormal. You don't know it as much about Anna Kendrick's character because she appears put together. And then you learn something despicable that you'd rather not have known.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be the punchline of the movie's biggest joke.
Yeah.
But what was crazy about that was, like, I just thought the movie was trying to do something, like, bigger and bring back the brother character later on. As
right.
He killed Blake Lively for some reason. I was like, this is really weird and convoluted already.
Well, even in that, that would have been interesting. Like, that particular deviation from the story, I would have accepted that. Like, if that was the case, then it kind of moves more into, like, to the Requiem for a Dream type of mindset, just the Darren Aronofsky type of filmmaking. That's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that makes a little bit more sense.
Darren Aronofsky would have had a field day with this story, and I bet he would have done it better.
He would have done it so better.
Because that guy knows crazy.
He does. But, like Chad was saying, this was just mentioned over and over and over again as just part of this running gag that was never funny in the first place. Like, the way this Anna Kendrick's character conveys this story, and then how it makes it just turn into this just awkward moment between her and Blake Lively, and then all of a sudden you have this running gag of, like, oh, you did your brother, oh, and it's like, nah, I don't really want to remember that.
You just want to get away. I mean, like Spencer said, you kind of just are like, I'm done, I'm leaving.
Oh, man.
We didn't. We stayed the whole time.
Sadly.
We really should be getting paid for this.
Oh, yeah. One day. One day.
Hey, they turned a profit, right? They can spare the $9 or whatever we spent on our tickets. Give it back.
We want our money back. And that goes to, like, to the way this film was shot, the storytelling of it all, because you essentially have this film that, first off, takes forever in telling this really convoluted story of somebody who fakes her death and blah, blah, blah. But the way it goes about doing it, it just, you usually have this roller coaster ride with most films. You have your ups, you have your downs, you have your low points, you have your high points, you have your interesting points, you have the revelation points, you have all these different aspects of the roller coaster ride. This film just continued to roll on, like, cruise control in terms of, like, that slow pace. And then it tried to ramp up real quick. And it seemed like anything that had to do with Anna Kendrick's character and anything happening at home moved at that snail's pace. Everything that had to do with Blake Lively seemed to be just so chaotic and craziness and whatever. The problem is that all of Blake Lively's scenes are, like, super small and concise and don't happen very often. And so you're left with, like, a lot of those lull moments where it's like, oh my gosh, can we go to the next scene already? Okay, I get it. She's taking out the clothes in the room. Okay, I get it. She's having trouble with the zipper. Okay, I get it. She's making dinner for whatever. Everything seemed to take way too long. Okay, Spencer, you got this confused,
like,
look.
I agree with you on all of those points. But, like, one of the confusing parts for me was the whole dress scene. Where she puts on, like, after Blake Lively has been, like, murdered, like, she puts on a dress in her, like, dressing room and then is stuck in it when a police officer calls. I'm like, who goes around wearing a dead person's clothes? Like, I know they're dead, but, like, you knew this person, and it's kind of creepy.
What are you doing in her house when she's dead, her husband isn't home, and the kid is at school? Why are you there?
Why are you in
wearing
her
clothes?
Yeah.
And why were the police looking for you there, too? That's weird.
Well, he said, I went to your house and didn't find you there, I came over here.
That the moms had said that she would.
Honestly, that
here.
Detective guy was the only redeemable character in the whole thing, like, in terms of any form of likability.
I don't know. That little boy, her little boy, was actually pretty good, too. He did probably the best acting in all the movies.
Blake Lively's kid? Or
no. Anna Kendrick's.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like that particular. Okay, let's talk about that particular scene. Mm-hmm. That scene seemed like they were trying to recreate something that Kristen Wiig would do in a comedy movie.
Yes,
that's how that feeling felt when I saw that. I'm like, this doesn't fit right.
It's not a thriller scene.
No,
it's a joke scene in a very serious moment.
He's trying to question her about the disappearance of this woman. Or the whereabouts of the woman in terms of like how she died and all the things that they found from the coroner and whatnot. And she's sitting there awkwardly in this tight dress that's too tight for her. And like it seems like this scene is supposed to be funny. In any other circumstance, you would probably be laughing seeing her being so awkward and uncomfortable. But the circumstances that are happening and the fact that this officer is trying to figure out who may have killed this person, it just didn't fit. It's like, what's happening here? It's like two scenes just combined into one just didn't make sense. It was
a mess.
In terms of like the way this film, like we were just talking about storytelling wise, one of the problems that I had with this film is that I don't feel like, and obviously we're gonna be talking about spoilers, the film has already come out in theaters, I don't feel like I had any kind of resolution at the end of this film. Like, I don't feel like the way this story continued through, for what I sat through, I did not get my return on what I was watching.
You want to know what's kind of insulting?
What?
Like, the very end of the movie, like, when the movie stops, it just goes into, like, this, like, cutscene credits of, like, here's what these characters are doing after the movie ends. And I'm like, is this a joke? Because it seems super lazy and really odd.
It really does.
And it's a fictional story. So.
I didn't get it at all.
Yeah, that was one thing. I wasn't sure if, like, at the end of the film, I'm like, is this movie based on, like, real events?
Nope.
I had to actually go and look that up. I'm like, this is just a stupid movie.
Yep.
None of this makes sense.
Just some loon wrote a book and some Hollywood executive decided, I don't know, like it doesn't, it's mind-boggling.
Okay, one of my many questions I have for this movie.
Lay it on us.
Okay, at the very end of the movie, like, Sean and his kid move to California.
Mm-hmm.
But the last scene with Anna Kendrick, she's still in his kitchen?
Yes, she is.
So did she buy his house? Why is she there?
He may have gave it to her. I don't know.
Gave her
there's a lot like that happens in house. Spencer, there's a lot that happens in this movie that makes no sense. Like, how much of that life insurance money did she spend going all over the place looking for this woman? Like, she went all the way to Michigan.
I thought zero because they didn't get it yet because it was still under investigation.
Her husband's.
Oh, right. There's two in play.
That she and her boy were living off of until a certain point in time.
Until like 2020 or something.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, we're going to run out. Yeah, in 2020. And she's over here running off, staying in motels, doing God knows what, being all the way out. Like, where did she get all those cleaning supplies? Like, when she snuck into that one house. Like, where do you find most of this stuff at? Like, it's not like she's just, you know, rolling in dough, obviously. This woman has, like, a time frame in terms of money.
Mm-hmm.
So why is she, like, I'm wondering how much money did she spend on all that? Like,
too much is the answer.
Well, and is it vital? I, like, one of my big problems, actually, with this film, as if we haven't talked about other problems, was completely wasting your supporting cast. Like, yeah. I do not know why Linda Cardellini, Rupert Friend, and Gene Smart are in this movie. I don't know. Like, they're wasted. Like, they're I guess if they really wanted to work with Paul Feig or the studio said, we'll pay you a bunch, but obviously they didn't with an operating budget of $20 million. They didn't pay him too much.
No.
You know, or if they loved book, I guess, maybe. I don't, I can tell by the movie, the book I would put down almost immediately.
I did.
It wouldn't appeal to me at all.
I did. It's really sad in terms of this particular film because of the fact that there's such an interesting supporting cast, like you were saying, that could have really added more to the story had they been a part of the story a little bit more. Like, there's a scene where Rupert Friend's character actually begins to look at Anna Kendrick's character and like looks at her like really like suspiciously, like she may be a part of something or whatnot. And it's like, huh, I wonder if he's going to do his investigating or whatever. And that would have added another layer to the whole dynamic. It would have probably made a little bit more interesting of a story, but...
Did he? Nope.
Nope. I blame Spencer for that one.
No, you will not. I had nothing to do with this movie.
There's a lot that this film attempts to step out on and try to do and just falls so horribly short on. But
well, I think one of the problems it has is it overloads itself with all this unimportant garbage that it's like, look over here, look over here, oh my gosh, look over here, look over there, look over here, look over there, and you're like, none of this matters. Like, you know that none of it matters.
Yeah.
And you can see them wasting your time, and it's just frustrating.
100%. Like, why the heck did we have to see the scene of Anna Kendrick taking out all of Blake Lively's clothes after they find out the characters died, showing her taking all the clothes out and putting them somewhere else and coming back, bringing her own clothes and the closet being filled back up again? Why was that important?
It was supposed to be a shock value, but it wasn't shocking at all.
Not at all.
Like it didn't work at all.
It was a room full of clothes. Scary.
It's all back where it was before.
Somebody put the clothes away.
Because real talk, nobody puts clothes away.
It's true.
That's also true, yeah.
So, kind of wrapping this up, because honestly, we could go on and on in terms of how bad this movie is, but just plain and simple, this movie will waste your time. If you're looking for a smart, intelligent murder mystery type of film that has a consistent story and actually gives you that type of thrill and hope and desire and just longing to see the antagonist, you know, be beaten and the protagonist finally win.
And doesn't waste your time.
Go see something from the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, go see a good one. This movie was garbo, and I will gladly say that. It is garbage to the nth degree. So before we wrap this up, I know, Spencer, you had a bunch of questions and thoughts and whatnot. So lay it on us, Spencer.
Here are my issues with this movie.
All right.
Okay. So I have to talk about like kind of like the main what's going on of this for it to really
okay give the backstory.
Well, not the entire thing because I don't have that time. So the reason why Blake Lively went missing is because she got a message from her twin long lost sister, who she ran away with like 14 years ago when they burned down part of their parents' house and killed their father because he was abusive. The reason the sister found Blake Lively is because she was on Facebook. Now, here's my question. Why was she on Facebook? Because she freaks out when anyone takes her photo. Like, Facebook logs where you log in.
Because of the fact that her husband took the picture, took their family picture and posted it on Facebook. Remember he tells...
Yeah, he mentioned that on his Facebook. Why does she have one? Like, how did she know that?
Okay.
Why would you have a Facebook? Facebook is not for hiding. It doesn't make any sense.
And how do you scan every photo ever taken on Facebook for one person?
Well, that's a great question.
It's a very weak part of the plot, but it's a very weak plot altogether. So,
what else you got, Spencer?
Unsurprising.
Okay. So, Blake Lively's, like, you know, trying to be, like, this aloof, like, person who's, like, you know, you can't really know about my past. But part of the problem is she's constantly putting out these mysterious vibes about who she is and, like, where she comes from.
Yeah.
Make up a fake past. You've had 14 years to do it. Oh, I had a really rough childhood, and I don't really like to talk about my parents. You just solved half of your interests right there. Like, nobody's going to really poke that kind of bear.
Nobody's going to poke that
kind of bear. Well, come on, because then you're a jerk. If you're like, oh, no, tell me about your parents and your rough childhood.
Oh, my God.
That's just so weird. And then the reason why the sisters weren't together was because they're twin sisters. They didn't want to get caught for the murder. Why not just move to a really big city like New York? together. Like, you don't have to have the same circle of friends. Like, if someone notices you, just pretend to be the other person. Like, the Olsen twins did that all the time on Full House. Like, you must have seen this. Like, I don't know why they didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting to me about the whole twin thing, because that is a reveal. It's not really a good one, because you're like, okay, they pretty much telegraph it as soon as the body is recovered. I mean, you're basically told this can't be her. But then when you get the flashback of the two sisters fully grown, interacting with each other and having a conflict, the one that you're not familiar with, the other Blake Lively, says, "Oh, now you were the beta. Now you want to be the alpha."
Yeah.
And the Blake Lively that you're used to says, "Yeah, I'm ready to be the alpha." And you're like, okay, you've been completely unhinged the entire time. I don't know that I would call it alpha behavior, but it sure as heck isn't beta behavior. It's in a way, it's kind of like the Joker.
Yeah.
In the way that it defies classification on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, intentionally defies classification. That's the way that she operates. That's her MO. And so, yeah, to learn that, like, the other one is potentially even worse is, I mean, it's kind of a wasted moment because it doesn't matter. You already know that the other one's not going to make it because you've already seen the other one dead in the future. But it was just, like, again, like, one of those unnecessary deviations, which is meant to be a reveal, but it kind of just doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it's at this point in the film, you're already an hour and a half into the movie, and you begin to start just not caring. You're ultimately, like Spence was saying, you're ultimately at the point where you're just like, I want this to end. This needs to end now. Like, I was so glad that there weren't as many trailers in this particular theater when we were watching it as I thought there were. Like, I actually mentioned to you, I'm like, oh, they must have put, like, every teaser and not trailer in this particular one. Because we got a lot of little teasers. Like,
yeah,
a lot of
those. That's true. Yeah, there were way too many teasers.
Chad, any other issues? Any last issues?
No last issues. I just, if you've made it this far through the episode, congratulations. We've done our best to not complain without reason, but to have solid reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking still about seeing the movie just out of some morbid curiosity, like, could it really be that unpleasant? I want you to think about the following visual, which does occur in the film. Blake Lively, elegant, gorgeous person, terrible personality, this character, gleefully throwing a wrench up into the air in slow motion, turning her face to the sky, and waiting for the wrench to come down and hit her in the head because of what she's going to do next. Mm-hmm. Like, that to me really is the embodiment of this movie. Like, that slow motion scene is the only thing that you need to know if you like the idea of a grown woman throwing a wrench into the air and embracing with her face that wrench when it comes down, then go see this movie. You will be satisfied because that's what this movie is.
I assure you, it would be better to just hit your own self with a wrench than go see this one. So, with that said, let's go ahead and go around the table, and I will kick this off with...
You said it so calmly. I assure you, it would be better to hit yourself in the face with a wrench.
I'll go ahead and kick this off with the pass or fail and how many monocles. In terms of this film does fail for me. I am a huge fan of these murder mystery type film noir films. And this film, much like sci-fi, does not achieve what it sets out to do. It fails on all levels. And unlike all the other puff piece reviews that are out there that say this is a quirky new type of noir genre and whatever, blah blah blah, no, this film is not coherent enough for me to even think about something like that. I would rather just not see it again and remove it from my mind and get a lobotomy. So with that said, it fails, and I will give it half a monocle for the little guy I take that back. For the little children who have to put up with all the adults in this particular film.
Well said.
Spencer.
This movie fails. It fails on so many levels, Ace. But mostly because I had to think about Anna Kendrick sleeping up with her brother. That just was very unnerving. I hated it. I wanted to leave. I couldn't.
If y'all could see his face right now.
I really had a hard time with that scene. But yeah, no, the basic logic of this movie doesn't work in like so many different levels. For instance, they said that she rented a car with cash. Blake Lively's character.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
You need some type of...
You have to use a credit card. Where you live, that doesn't happen in reality. So it fails, and I'm going to give it a 0.1.
0.1 monocle. He's giving him a tenth of a monocle. Yeah.
You guys are too generous. This movie fails and gets zero monocles.
Hold on. Why a tenth? What's the tenth for?
Why?
Why?
Because you don't want to give it zero?
Pressure.
Join me on the dark side. Give it a zero.
No, a zero. Like, you have to be a little bit worse than this, honestly, for me. Like, there has to be no effort, no caring. People just showed up in their pajamas type thing. Like, this movie is real close to that, but it's not quite that.
So pretty much every Transformers movie is what he's saying. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. So the 10th is for...
Oh, it's mostly for, you know, some minor acting.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Chad.
Oh, I already said mine. Zero. Fail, yeah, zero, fail, zero, fail, zero, fail, zero, fail, zero. There, I've occupied all the time I would normally take explaining my score.
So Chad gives it a fail and zero monocles. I think that may be a first on here.
I've ever done that before.
We may have to go back to the archives.
You can fact check me, but yeah, I don't recall ever... I certainly have not done so with such gusto.
I was going to say he's quite excited about
it. Very passionate about this. I've known since about halfway through the movie, I knew. I'm going to give this zero.
Yeah, I knew this film was not going to do it for me either as soon as I walked out. So, yeah. So that about wraps up another interesting review of the film. Again, let us know what you think. If you do so bravely decide to go and see the film, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Let us know on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Before we go, we want to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. You got Hellfest, Night School starring Kevin Hart and...
Tiffany Haddish.
There you go. And, of course, Smallfoot debuts this Friday, which doesn't look good. So if you're looking,
it looks like an Oscar winner compared to this movie.
You know what's sad is like we were going to go see Smallfoot, and I was like, I really don't want to see this movie, and now I really wish we did.
Yeah, here's what I learned in this experience. We were joking before the movie started. Wouldn't it be funny if the movie was actually bad and we walked out, and then we had to figure out what to talk about of a movie that we walked out of? About 25 minutes into the movie, I'm sitting there thinking, Eddie did the first of many exasperated sighs, and he goes, why is this taking so long? This is boring. And I thought, I do want to leave this movie. I want to walk out. But then I was concerned that something would have happened that would have been good and important and redeeming about it, and I would have let our listeners down. Now I know.
It never happened.
Follow your gut.
Yeah. I would have to agree with that. So, of course, like we said, head over to thefilmlosophers.com where you can check out all of our previous episodes and listen to some of our other ones that we actually enjoyed, because we love cinema, and sadly, these types of films are the reason why we don't see every movie out there.
True.
So... from all of us here at the Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.